Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Welcome back to the Swamp, my friends. Today we're going to be telling creepy tales from national parks. These stories were sent in by viewers just like you. And if you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email that you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. Stories like yours to help keep this channel going. Now, let's get into these creepy stories that'll keep you up tonight. This story takes place in a small town called Leadville, Colorado, in 1976. We had just relocated there from Texas, and this town was surrounded by a national forest. We needed a place to rent, and my parents found a mobile home on the outskirts of town. We would be renting it from an older woman and her adult, albeit creepy, son. We quickly got moved in, went and bought groceries, and began our new life. It was not even a full week till we had come home from a day out. My dad's job was hunting, and we also were trying to do a little sightseeing. So Mom and I would tag along with him. It was starting to get late, and my mom noticed that the lock to the front door was not locked. She always was vigilant about locking doors, never leaving windows open, etc. It was not like her at all to accidentally not lock a door. Apparently, though, my dad just dismissed this as a mistake on their part, and not that someone had let themselves in. Upon inspection of the trailer, nothing had been stolen, and everything looked to be in order. My mom began to set about making us dinner. She had poured herself and me a glass of orange juice, of which I had yet to take a sip because I was, I guess, distracted by something else. She then pulled out some milk as well, maybe to mash potatoes with, I'm not sure. But when she poured the milk, it looked like it was curdling and not right. This whole time she had been drinking her juice, that is when she started feeling dizzy and unwell. She then grabbed the glass she poured me and tossed it into the sink. She yelled to my dad that something was wrong and she felt bad and that she needed to get to the hospital quickly. We got in our van and drove off. I do remember her seeming to sort of fade in and out of consciousness. I remember being upset and I was crying some. We got to the emergency room. She had enough strength to say that she believed that she had been poisoned, and then they took her off to where they pumped her stomach. As my mom was getting evaluated to see if she could be released and dad filing out paperwork, the nurse asked for their address. When my dad gave the address, the lady had this look of shock and horror on her face. She then advised my parents to try to move as soon as possible because everyone in town had bad feelings about the woman and her son. There had been missing people that had passed through town and potentially rented from those people never to be seen again. Apparently, there was never enough evidence to show any wrongdoing, but the townsfolk felt that they were responsible. There was no toxicology done, as this was 1976, but she feels strongly that someone had tampered with our food in the fridge. When we returned, my dad said that the man we had rented from was outside of the trailer looking our way. Keep in mind, by now, it would have been the wee hours of the morning. My dad said he grabbed a change of clothes for us all, loaded the van, and tried to just get out of there as fast as possible. Apparently, the guy walked over as my dad was loading up, asking if there was a problem. My dad said the guy had a rifle slung over his shoulder. When my dad mentioned why he had a rifle, he said something about skunks or pest wildlife. My dad said that he would be coming back tomorrow to get the rest of our stuff and was no longer renting. My dad said the guy looked very angry, asked why. My dad said that he and my mom decided to move into town rather than be as far as we were. We were about only 15 minutes away though, but, you know, it's a good excuse anyway. The guy looked inside the van, commented on me and my mom asleep, then said he would not be returning their rent or deposit. My dad said fine, whatever, and then got in and drove us to a motel for the remainder of the night. We went back the next day, and it was then obvious that all of our stuff had been looked through, again, door left unlocked, nothing was stolen but clearly had been looked through. My parents threw out all the groceries they had purchased and gathered all of our stuff. Luckily, we found a small apartment in the downtown area. We never really talked about this again, and when I became an adult, I didn't really look into it much until recently. My parents then shared with me our horrible experience when I asked one time, and I often wonder if these people we rented from were responsible for what happened to my mom, or was it just bad juice or something else, or were they just some sort of psychos? I won't ever really know, I guess. The 70s were full of drifters, hitchhikers, and hippies, who I guess go missing and are not missed. But I think we got lucky that nothing worse happened than what did. I live near a very large, very popular national park. Locals here, like myself, are pretty aware of the ongoings here. Strange sounds, strange creatures, and strange disappearances. I have dealt with these myself in the past on hikes and even just relaxing in the park. Here is one that still freaks me out to this day. I was at my grandma's house that's deep in the boonies. The only road that goes there is this gravel road that is pretty much washed away, so without a good car you're not getting up there anyways. My cousins lived in a trailer with their moms right below my grandma's. We played all sorts of games which mainly involved me getting chased. I was the youngest. My grandma was in the hospital with my aunt, so our older cousin, who I'll name Dee, had to watch us. Dee was and still is the only cousin that's older than us that we still hold in high regard. He would mess with us and play around, but actually cared about us. The whole day we would be playing around, but we usually play more at night, like hide and seek, tag, etc. We had been playing pretty far away from the house and it had just started to get dark. We decided to go back to the house and grab flashlights and play manhunt. Of course, I was the one being hunted. I ran pretty far into the woods on the other side of the property and hid behind a log. I heard my cousins getting close, so I ran and they saw me. We ended up running to the very back of the property line, almost a full mile from the house, and we saw my cousin Dee. He looked at us and kind of growled, and we all ran from him, thinking it was a game. We ran back onto the gravel road and we saw him walk out of the tree line. But when he did, he kind of had this weird, kind of gloating way about it. I don't know. We ran to the house and decided to barricade the door to play a prank on him. We moved a couple of things in front of the door but decided to move the big coffee table in front of it too. As we loudly scooted the table across the floor, Dee came into the living room from the master bedroom rubbing his eyes. We had obviously woke him up from all that movement and he was mad. We told him about seeing him chase us and he got wide-eyed. He told us to go to our bedroom and stay there. We sat in the bedroom for about 20 minutes and he came in and told us not to worry, that it was just him scaring us and we went on with the night. It wasn't until about 3 years later when I was 13 that he told me the truth, that it was probably a skinwalker. He told me that he's dealt with it more than one time, and when he was our age, he told me his story. Which I may share as well someday, depending on how far this goes, I guess. This is, of course, just one story. I have quite a few more. Be careful out in those national parks. There's just something out there. This is an experience I had that occurred in April of last year, almost an entire year ago. My mother is a traveling nurse and often gets assignments in Alaska and other less populated states. so I usually travel 3 to 4 times a year to go see her. This was my first time going to see her in Alaska. She was staying in Fairbanks for 3 months. While she was at work, I would take her rental car and explore Fairbanks and the neighboring areas and towns. Side note, Alaska is very sparsely populated and the towns of just 1,000 or more are considered somewhat large. One particular day, I decided to make the long day trip to Denali State Park via AK Highway 3, or Parks Highway, as it's often called. It is a long, windy, stretching road connecting Fairbanks to the outskirts of Anchorage, Alaska's largest city. Along the fairway from Fairbanks to Denali State Park, you pass through 3 or 4 towns, the largest of those being Nenana, which only has a population of 365. Once you get out of Fairbanks, it gets really lonely. I remember driving 40 to 50 miles without passing a single car. You kind of get mesmerized by the beauty of the landscape and the snowy, icy mountains surrounding you, and forget that you're in the middle of nowhere. Quality phone signal is few and far between when you're driving through this area. It was a weekday and off the tourist season in Alaska, so most of the vehicles I passed were log trucks or semi-trucks and the occasional regular motorist. It was early April, and there was still heavy packed snow on the side of the roads and in the forest and valley, but the roads were completely clear. From Fairbanks to Denali National Park, it is a 4 to 5 hour drive depending on road conditions. My main goal was to see Mount McKinley, the tallest mountain in North America. I hadn't really researched much of how to see it, but it was harder to see it in April than the summer months. There is a road that leads into the national park where you can see a view of Mount McKinley, but I had passed it not knowing whether the conditions were good or not. I looked on Google Maps and it showed there was something like a scenic view or overlook that you see on the American interstate sometimes. I assumed you may be able to see Mount McKinley from there. If you go on Google Maps, it is across from Byers Lake Campground. The campground appeared to be closed or desolate, but there were no gates or anything from stopping me to enter that point. It was at this point that I completely lost cell reception and my GPS on my phone wasn't working. As I pulled into the campground area, there were probably 16 to 24 inches of snow on some of the roads there. Some of the roads had been plowed, so I assumed there had been people visiting, but there were no cars or anyone in sight. There are a bunch of winding roads that almost resemble a maze that lead to a dead end. Now, for the entire 4+ hours I had been driving, not once did I have any uneasy or bad feelings. When I am usually in desolate areas, especially the desert, I have really bad vibes, but it wasn't like this in Alaska for some reason. That had changed about 30 seconds into entering the campground area. Maybe it was the fact that I was turning into some abandoned campground, or the fact that I am completely lost with no cell reception, but something didn't sit right with me. But I was determined to see Mount McKinley, and I was trying to focus on that and finding a good place to take some cool pictures. I had drove down these winding roads and hit dead ends, and then suddenly it started to get really cloudy. I was getting more frustrated at not finding a good area to take some pictures, and then I realized I was lost. It is not far at all from the main highway, but I was lost. I started to get really confused about exactly where I was, and my GPS wasn't working. So I started to panic a little. I made my way down this dirt road to the lake and there was a large opening. My bad feelings went away temporarily because of the view. It was so beautiful. The lake was completely frozen and behind it in the background was a small snowy mountain. The scene was just something straight out of National Geographic magazine. So I stepped out to take some pictures. I stood there for a few minutes just admiring the beauty of the Alaskan wilderness and was looking at my pictures to see if they were good, when I heard this scream in the distance. It was a close scream, but it sounded muffled, almost like something was able to control the volume of their voice to make it seem far away, but in reality, it was close. My heart started racing as I looked around to try and find what it was. Everything in my body was telling me to book it for the car and find the way out, but I just stood there confused and kind of scared. I felt like I was being watched and all the hair stood up on my arm. I was wondering if it was a bobcat or a mountain lion, because they are often mistaken for women screaming. I look out the far side of the lake and see this person wearing a light orange jacket and jeans. They had a green beanie on their head. I waved at them and they waved back immediately. Then this overwhelming feeling of dread and terror entered my body. I was wearing a light orange jacket, jeans, and a green beanie. The person had brown skin like me. I'm half Filipino and half white. I couldn't make out the facial features, but I feel like I could see black hair sticking out of the beanie, which is the color of my hair. I just stand there for a few seconds, frozen in shock and fear, and then I noped the heck right out of there. I hightailed it up the hill to my car and basically did a donut in the snow, spinning tires trying to get out of there. I started panicking, was trying to find the exit. I saw a sign that was almost completely covered in snow, but had an arrow pointing to the left, and I came out to the first part of the campground. It was a bathroom facility and an office, and it had a veterans memorial statue. There was this white owl just perched on top of it, staring at me with its head just sideways, like bending over. I found the way out and sped the entire way back to Fairbanks, checking my rearview mirror every 10 seconds. I do not really know what to make of the situation. As I entered civilization, I came back down and didn't really have any other weird experiences in Alaska. I've considered the thought of it being a skinwalker or an Oswong, which is Filipino shapeshifter in folklore, but I'm not sure. This happened around August of last year in Yosemite National Park. I'm not sure what we experienced or if it was anything truly odd at all, but I thought it was weird. So this was a hike up to Half Dome, and we had a campground about 20 minutes drive away from the trailhead, and the group we composed of was me, who's an 18-year-old male, my uncle, who's a 32-year-old male, and my uncle's friend, I'll call him D. There were two girls with us, but they aren't relevant to the story. My uncle and his friend are both Christian, so there were no substances consumed that could induce the feelings I will be talking about. We got to our campsite, set up camp, and got to sleep after eating. We planned to wake up at 4 and start the hike by 4:30. I randomly wake up at 3:30 a.m., like I'm completely wide awake, and look out of my hammock, and I remember feeling this odd feeling as if I was woken up by something, and I remember looking out at this moonlit scene. The moon was very bright for some reason, and thinking to myself, it was like a dream. I lay back in the hammock, but can't go back to sleep. I end up waking up my uncle and his friend at 3:50. My uncle asked me, "Were you walking around?" This is important, and I say no, and ask why. He says he woke up for some reason and could hear someone walking around. Not like an animal, but a person. "Huh," I say, "that's weird." And we brush it off. We get to the trailhead at around 4:30, and as everyone is unloading from the car, Dee says he's going to use the bathroom, which there are a couple of them before the trailhead. I walk behind him for some time before falling behind and waiting for my uncle, who forgot something in the car. The short straight road from the parking lot runs directly into a T-intersection with the road to the trailhead, and the bathroom is directly across from the intersection through a little field. Those who have been there know what I'm talking about. We get to the intersection and wait for D to come out of the bathroom. We wait for about 10 minutes before I go and check the bathroom. He isn't there. I get back to my uncle and tell him that. He says, weird, maybe he went back to the car or something. And we decided to wait a bit more. By 5:10 we begin to worry. My uncle goes back to check the car while I wait at the intersection to make sure we don't miss him if he went down the road away from the trailhead. My uncle returns, says he isn't there either. We decide maybe he went up to the trailhead without us for some reason, and walk up and about 10 minutes later, we still haven't found him. He isn't there either. We are kind of baffled now, because there are no logical places he would go. I decided to run back and check the car and the bathroom again. I meet him halfway before I get to the intersection. He is sweaty and disheveled, with a weird look in his eyes. I say, "Where have you been?" He says he went to the bathroom, and when he got back to the intersection, we weren't there, and he just assumed we went to the trailhead and started walking, and then he met me. I say, what do you mean? We waited at the intersection for half an hour, checked the car, the bathroom, the trailhead, and you weren't there. He says, well, I don't know. I went to the bathroom. He then asked me where my uncle is. I say, at the trailhead. He then asked me, I'll tell him again, and note that it was weird he asked me twice. As we're crossing the bridge to the trailhead, he sees a light off the riverbank and exclaims, oh, maybe that's him. And I just look at him and keep walking. I thought his behavior was very strange, like he wasn't thinking straight. We finally get on with the hike, and then it goes by as normal. Except that we seem to keep losing things, such as my uncle's small red flashlight, one of the girl's gloves, a water bottle, etc. It's like we just simply forgot about the items and couldn't remember where we could have left them. On the way back, it got dark and we turned on our flashlights. And as we near the end of the hike, after the two waterfalls, it begins to seem as if we've been walking for far too long. My uncle also confirms this, asking me, doesn't it seem like it's taking way longer to get back? I say, yeah, I was just thinking that. We keep walking, but it still seems like we're making way too many steps and not making any progress. I've been on that trail many times, and I was walking, and I couldn't spot any familiar landmarks. It was weird. There was this odd feeling in the air, sort of like a slight menacing feeling. It's hard to describe. I remember thinking it feels like the woods are alive. We remark three more times about how long the hike is taking, and began to laugh at it because it felt so ridiculous. After a bit, we finally and suddenly found ourselves on the final stretch and make it back to the car. Now, all of this seemed odd at the time, but I just brushed it off. I only realized how weird those events felt after we got home, and my aunt asked my uncle, were you camping? And he says, yeah, how'd you know? As we didn't tell them where we were going, as it was kind of last minute. She says that she had an odd dream, where she sees my uncle in a tent in a forest somewhere, and someone is outside of his tent. She says she couldn't see who it was, but she knew that there was a presence there. She says she woke up at around 3 and had a strong urge to pray for him, and she did. My uncle kind of looks at me after that like, are you hearing this? I honestly don't know what to make of all of this, but I wanted to share this here, and hopefully maybe somebody can share an opinion on what happened. This was about 3 years ago in Big Bend National Park. My friend, my husband, and I were all going on a trip to do some primitive camping. I'm not a hardcore camper, but I've done my share of primitive camping and hiking, so I like to think I have some wilderness sense. I know what common animals are like, having grown up in 8 acres of forested land. Coyotes were frequent visitors, so I know how creepy they can sound. That's why I know what we encountered that night was something else. We arrived at Big Bend around 4 p.m., checked in, and set up our camp at our campsite, Nine Point Draw. It's a pretty desolate location around the entrance to the park. The campsite is about 25 miles to the visitor center and lodge, and about 40 miles from the Rio Grande Village. So we were not really near any kind of civilization. We had the idea that we would go for a night hike to a nearby trail after having dinner that night. So in preparation, I decided to scout out a trail from our campsite. The terrain in this part of the camp is totally flat desert with some ground vegetation, so we thought it would be an easy route for our campsite to the trail. The trek from our campsite was not difficult, but as an added precaution, I put up rock piles for us to follow that night. After dinner, we decided to head out at around 10 p.m. The first 10 minutes were pretty uneventful. We were all in good spirits. Suddenly, we hear a scuttling noise from about 50 feet behind us. Having been used to animal noises at night, we wrote it off as a critter. A few minutes later, we heard the same noises a bit closer, sounding like a bigger animal. There are black bears here, but we weren't in the area that they're normally sighted. Like I said, the landscape was wide open and we didn't see anything with our flashlights. We were a bit uneasy, but willing to go on. The rock piles had been doing a good job of leading in the right direction. All at once I stopped, feeling absolute terror. It's an indescribable feeling. I see many others reference this feeling, but it's so true. I knew we were in danger. I just didn't know why. I looked to my friend and my husband, who both looked terrified as well. There was no sound, no wind, and then in an instant, the most inhuman scream erupted, seemingly all around us. We all froze for what felt like minutes, but I'm sure it was just seconds. I don't remember making the decision to run back, but the next thing I remember, we were all running. We had made it pretty far out, even though I thought I was running in the direction of our camp. I remember scanning for the rock piles. I remember not being able to find Eddie, and almost turning back thinking we were heading in the wrong direction, but had this instinct not to. We made it to a rather large rock I knew was on the route back to the campsite. I also remembered putting a rock pile beside the rock. I went to check if it was there to make sure we were headed back to our campsite. The rocks were still there, but they had been knocked over. This set off all the alarms, and I told my friend and my husband that we had to get back to the camp as soon as possible. We made it back a few minutes later, and by the time I was back, I was entirely freaked out and didn't want to stay anymore. I think my husband was as well, but my friend convinced us that it was just wildlife. So we stayed in the tent that night. I don't know if it was connected, but there was scuttling and footsteps around the tent all night. Either way, I did not sleep. We did not do any more primitive hiking that trip and opted instead for a campsite in one of the community camps. I've never felt that feeling before or since, and I've been in the woods at night plenty of times. The next day I went out to check if all the rock piles had been knocked down, and they had. I don't think an animal would deliberately go around knocking over the markers. That's what really makes me think it was sentient. I don't know what it was, but I don't want to know, and I'm glad we made it out. As promised, I'm going to share another personal story of mine. Just to preface this isn't written down, this isn't me narrating, this is just me sharing one of my personal stories off the top of my head. And seeing as this is a national park video, I do have a national park story of my own. Well, technically it's national forest, but I guess it's kind of the same thing. I was in the Daniel Boone National Forest with my little brother one day. And it was towards the end of the day. We were at this place where it's like a little bridge almost, and you could see like across this little creek, and there's like these bushes on the other side. And I remember just sitting there looking at it and getting ready to go walk to the entrance to meet our parents and get ready to go home and stuff. As we're looking there, my brother is throwing rocks across, trying to get them all the way across the creek. And I remember just seeing a set of eyes kind of just shine all of a sudden. And I was like, okay, that's kind of weird. I didn't think anything of it. But then I noticed that there was another set of eyes not too far away from that one. And I was like, okay, that's a little creepy. Maybe it's just some cats or something. Maybe it's something in the woods. Who knows, right? At this point, I have heard coyotes a million times living out in the middle of nowhere. I had seen them personally a ton of times, but I've never really been close to them, you know? Never been, like, face-to-face or even, you know, 50 to 100 feet away from them like we are at this point. Then I noticed that there's probably 6 or 7 sets of eyes glowing in the sunset light there. And I'm like, well, this is kind of weird. This is definitely not a comfortable situation. I hope this is not gonna be something I regret soon. So I begin getting nervous and get up and like, okay, we should probably start walking back now. Let's go meet our parents and get out of here. My brother's like, okay, sure, let me just throw one more rock, because he wants to try to make it all the way across. He hasn't been able to do it the whole time, so he's trying his best. This time, he surprisingly does make it all the way across, but as it lands on the other opposite bank, that's when we notice that all these coyotes are starting to sprint towards us across the creek. So we start running as fast as we can. At this point, I was in track and field for a couple of years. I had been pretty conditioned to just, you know, get out of there and go for the long haul, and I could probably just run forever. My little brother at the time was really short. He hadn't hit his growth spurt yet, so he was probably like 4'2", something like that, And he could probably run pretty fast, but not for a super long amount of time because of his short legs. So we're probably running for a good quarter mile at this point and just going as fast as we can with these coyotes literally on our heels. It was insane. They were probably only about 100 yards behind us the entire time. My brother starts slowing down, so I have to literally make a choice decision to pretty much pick him up as I'm still running and carry him as we are just trying not to be eaten by these coyotes, I guess. This was probably the hardest task of my teenage years, to be honest, because at that time I was only like 85 pounds myself. I was really skinny and drastically underweight at that point. But, you know, that's just how metabolisms be. But yeah, we start running, we keep running. I'm like, okay, hopefully we'll be able to outrun him. It quickly becomes apparent that I'm not going to be, especially, you know, carrying my brother. So I have to set him down, and I pick up this big stick that I happen to see on the ground, and I just start swinging this thing towards these freaking coyotes as they get close. And luckily enough, this is where the story, you know, you think would climax and be super creepy, but gets better. As I'm swinging this branch, I'm like screaming on the top of my lungs, like, hey, you know, like I'm for some reason doing something you would do to a bear, I don't know, but I'm just trying to scare them off, make me seem like I'm nothing to be messed with. And luckily another person comes down and sees what we're doing, and they come and help me as well with another stick, and they eventually run off because they're a bunch of scaredy cats. That's how coyotes work usually. But it was a creepy encounter nonetheless. We ended up not being eaten by coyotes, and we ended up living. I hope you guys enjoyed this personal little creepy story of mine. Well, personal creepy encounter. Personally, being chased down was one of the creepiest things that's ever happened in my life. Thanks for listening to this video. If you enjoyed these stories, please hit that like button as it helps me out a ton. If you're new to the channel, why not join us and hit the subscribe button and turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day on all things natural and supernatural. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, whether it's a national park story or something else, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this channel going. If you're not aware, you can download your favorite Swamp Dweller Scary Stories on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and just about every other major podcasting platform out there. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting the Swamp the way you do. It's insane to see how many people have joined the Swamp over the years. If you haven't seen yet, I recently put out a brand new shirt. You can see it under the video now. It's called King of the Swamp. Be sure to check that out. It's actually my favorite one so far. If you guys made it all the way to the end of the video, today's code word is King Swamp. I love seeing your interesting and very creative replies with these code words. It makes my day. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.